You are unique, active, determined, resilient. You are not your diagnosis, and you are not alone. This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.
Where do you find your inspiration, and what helps you get through your tough times? Here at Radio Parkies, we enjoy, in part, interviewing people who inspire us to be our very best during our challenging times with Parkinson's disease. And today we are talking with an inventor who has adapted her lifestyle in miraculous ways, in creative ways. She's a musician. She holds a double degree in piano and also music education. She's been a professor. She's pretty much done everything. Let's hear more about her. Here she is in our studio right now. We are so thrilled to welcome Jan Grimes.
We'll be back with Jan right after the song "It Had Better Be Tonight" by Michael Bublé.
Meglio stasera, baby, go, go, go. Or as we natives say, fa subito. If you're ever gonna kiss me, it had better be tonight. While the mandolins are playing and stars are bright, if you've anything to tell me, it had better be tonight. Or somebody else may tell me and whisper the words just right. Meglio stasera, baby, go, go, go. Or as we natives say, fa subito. If you're ever gonna hold me, it had better be tonight. Or somebody else may hold me, and they might make me feel just right. Maybe just a sailor, baby, go, go, go. Or as we natives say, fa subito. For this poor Americano, who knows a little of your speech, be a nice Italiana and start to teach. Go ahead, show me how in old Milano lovers hold each other oh so tight. But I warn you, sweet paisana, that it had better be tonight. Meglio stasera, baby, go, go, go. Or as we natives say, fuck to be time.
When I was teaching and everything, and I knew something was wrong, I went to a neurologist here in town. And he did everything the insurance company would allow with testing, you know. And I just wasn't getting any answers. So I went to Baylor over in Houston, their medical center there, because they had something special going on for artists, musicians, and thought, well, this is really great. So a colleague went along because he had some issues also. So we're piling over there. And I think I'm going to be told, oh, you just need a little Alexander technique. You need a little massage. You need a break from work. No. He had me walk across his office and I hadn't even gotten back to my chair. He said, I think you have Parkinsonism. Just like that.
Did I hear right? Within 2006?
2006.
Same here. Did I diagnose too?
Wow. Well, it hit me like a bolt out of the blue. You know, I started to cry and I always said, oh, it's not that bad, you know, la, la, la. And when I left, he said, quote, when you need a good disability letter, come back because I write a really good one.
He used the word, the D word, in the first appointment within the first few minutes?
Yes. When you need it, wow. Come back because I write a good one.
Needless to
say, I have not. Oh, he asked me, do you still put on your own eye makeup? And I'd like to tell him today that although I don't wear a lot, I do it myself. But he really did not. He discouraged me. He didn't give me any reason to be hopeful or anything. I fired him a long time ago. I never went back. I never responded to anything he never sent anything to me. So I came back home and went to the local neurologist who said, well, then it's time to start you on some an agonist. So I went on Murapex right away. And that, of course, opened up the whole world for me because I thought, wow, I'm back to myself, you know? But that didn't last very long. But in God's own way, he said, when I retired in May of 17, I thought, what am I going to do? I've got Parkinson's. I'm going to just sit at home. I'm going to rot. Well, I went to the local Parkinson's conference that year at the Pennington Biomedical Center. And lo and behold, I run into a former LSU School of Music student who was a clarinet major whose senior recital I accompanied in 2004. And she had gone on to medical school and become a neurologist specializing in Parkinson's. And we've been together ever since. So we perform music and we speak at all kinds of meetings and gatherings where we can provide hope for people. We hope.
Music, so, universal language.
It is a
healing power. I just love it.
Power. There is definitely a healing power in music, performing it, playing it, and even listening to it. It's healing, it really is.
What instruments do you play?
Well, I play the piano and I'm a pianist who plays the organ, which means I don't have very good pedal technique. So I have a church job. You know, I play two masses every Sunday morning and I'm going to keep it as long as I can climb those 23 steps.
So you play the organ. How long have you been playing the organ?
Well, my mother was a church organist, so I helped her out at the church too. So a long time. Let's just say a long time.
Because the foot pedal work takes a long time to learn. When you're a kid, you probably couldn't even reach the pedals yet.
No. And honestly, I play as few pedals as I can get away with.
Now, still playing?
Yeah, I do. But the foot pedals, you know, a lot of organs have something called a coupler, which doubles the left hand to the pedals. So it sounds like you're playing the pedals, but you're not really doing it.
So you use both feet with the pedals?
Yes, well, I typically do the Hammond organ technique, which is the right foot on the swell pedals, and then the left foot dancing around on the actual pedal keyboard.
Does it help you with your Parkinson's symptoms using both sides of your brain?
I'm sure it does because, I mean, some mornings it's tougher for me to do it, you know? And I think it's all about that thing called making new connections, neural connections, you know? And so anytime I get a chance to do something a little bit out of the ordinary, I push myself to do it because it's all about mental neural connections, is what I want to say.
And I don't know if you've ever tried playing an organ, Mike, but there are two keyboards right on stack.
Yeah.
And there are these pedals you have to do this with just like a car.
Right.
And it's kind of like patting your head and rubbing your belly.
Constantly refocusing.
Yes.
You know, it's like you're multitasking, but you're not really multitasking. Your brain is darting back and forth from hand to foot to eye to pedal. Up, you know, yeah.
Why aren't we talking about this as a therapy for Parkinson's?
We should. Absolutely, we should.
Well, I think piano lessons alone would be great for people. Not only their small motor dexterity, but their brain, you know.
The left brain, right brain, you work both sides of the brain.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I stopped playing the violin when I was diagnosed because I was... The vibrato, as you know, looks like this. And I couldn't do the vibrato anymore or put my hands on the strings.
Yeah.
And everyone breathed a huge sigh of relief because I wasn't very good at that. They were like,
that violin.
But you kept going.
Well, you know what? I left LSU before they asked me to leave, I always say. No, I couldn't play up to my standard anymore. I wanted the program I had started, the accompanying program, to grow. And I knew it was going to need somebody with more energy than I had. So, you know, they say it's always best to leave the party before they ask you to leave. Nobody wants to be asked to leave. So that's what I did. And that was the right thing to do. So.
Wow. I'm sorry. My mind is kind of still blown a little bit here.
Okay. Well, mine just went almost blank for a second. What was I talking about? Typical Parkinson's brownout.
You know? Wow.
So it's been 16 years now for you since you were diagnosed.
Right. It was January of 2006. Yeah.
Can you describe a couple tough day for you at this point?
Describe a tough day?
Yeah.
A tough day for me is when I feel like my medicine isn't working at all. And I always, you know, I blame it on, did I not get enough sleep? Did I eat too soon after I took my medicine? What did I do to negate the positive? And so much of it is mental. If I am having a stressful day, or I'm having a little bit of a tiff with my husband or somebody else, you know, it really can play havoc. It's the
we mind. Don't know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, stress has so much effect on the body. Huge.
How about a good day?
A good day like today. I have the house to myself today, the whole house. We're loaning out our garage apartment to a college student for 3 weeks this summer, and she's delightful to have around, but she's gone most of the day. So this good day started out with having breakfast, doing the crossword puzzle, playing the piano a little bit just to get going, got a load of laundry going, you know, just active, busy, getting something done. I love doing puzzles. And there's actually something, an app that I have is great. It's called Elevate.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, you have to pay for it, but it's like taking a quiz at school every morning. It includes grammar. It includes all kinds of writing and reading quizzes, math quizzes, all mental math. It's fabulous. I try to do that every morning. I don't always.
So your mind is busy and active. Do you have any trouble sleeping?
Yes. I wake up during the night. If my husband is restless, or I have to say though, recently it's been better. And I think it's because my doctor recommended THC CBD before I go to bed.
It does help.
Yes, I have an ointment or oil that is half THC and half CBD. And I'll tell you, when I take that before bed, I sleep.
Wow. Anything else you want to talk about? How about your partner? Are they or is he supportive of what you're doing?
Yes. You know, it's my husband. It's hard for him sometimes to know how much to do. And I appreciate that. And it's hard for me to encourage him sometimes because it's like I want him to be attentive and helpful, but not too. I don't want him to make me feel incapable. So it's a hard line for him. He relies on me to ask for help. And I don't want to ask for help. But sometimes I need to ask for help. So I need to just drop the hubris, you know, and ask for help.
Now, have you had any DBS?
I have not had DBS.
You don't even look like you have Parkinson's to me.
If you saw me walk, you would have said.
Yeah, you probably get that a lot. People will tell you that you look great and that you seem like you're getting better. What do you say in reply to such commentary?
I had somebody say that exact thing to me once. Said, how's that hand thing? Is that getting better?
Hand thing.
And I said, I'm dealing with it. Thank you. You know, I can't say
where to begin.
Yeah. There's no beginning with someone like that because they won't get it.
You would rock their world. I mean, flowers would be decomposing and like, the sun would change. They just wouldn't really, you could see, you know, behind their eyes. They wouldn't really get it.
I have two interesting stories, real life stories. And one of my goals always is to educate people as much as possible about Parkinson's. And for what I know, and which is not everything, but I was in the dollar store once. I wanted to stop at the dollar store on my way home. And I thought there were only one or two cars in the parking lot. I thought, good, I can sneak in there, get it, get out. Well, I took the cart that was outside to help myself walk in. And this woman was coming to the door at the same time. I said, oh, would you please hold that? I have Parkinson's. It's going to take me a second to get to the door. Oh, she got very concerned. And she said, let me help you. She was going to help me shop. And I said, oh, please, I just came in for one thing. I can get it and I'll be out of the way. No, let me help. Well, she insisted to the point where I had to walk alongside her. And she said, do you have a family? I said, yes, I have two grown sons. They're out of the house, but very nice sons. Do you have a husband? I said, yes, I do. And he's at home. We're going to have lunch as soon as I get home. Does he know you're out? I wanted to say, I'll let him out of the bathroom when I get home.
Does he know you're out?
Does he know you're out? Like I had escaped the Looney Tunes.
That is so great.
But then, and in relation to the looking like you have Parkinson's, I was in the grocery store with my sister-in-law once, and I was pushing the cart. Well, my feet were doing a little dance behind the cart, you know, as I was going around the corner. And an elderly couple passed us, met us there. And the gentleman said, oh, I wish I could dance like that. And I said, well, you have to have Parkinson's to dance like this. And he said, no, you're too young to have Parkinson's. I said, oh, would that, were that true, that would be wonderful. And that was our little educational moment there. And I hope he didn't feel too terrible, but I smiled through the whole thing. But he just said, I wish I could dance like that. So
you know, over the last month, I've been accused of being drunk, the way I talk.
Yes.
I've been also ordered to pick up something for my wife at the cleaners yesterday. Uh-huh. Lady behind the counter asked if I was deaf because of the way I talked.
Oh.
It's all right. I took it as a teaching moment.
Yep, absolutely. Yes, exactly.
It really is like a dance.
It is. It is.
I think that's amazing. That you just
invite us to dance. Yeah, that's exactly right. And sometimes, you know, you just stutter in place. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
That freezing, like when we come to a threshold or a doorway.
Yes.
Isn't it weird?
Every now and then I'm successful at saying to myself, okay, here comes a doorway, or here comes a change in the flooring. Okay, you're going to walk right through it. You're going to do it. Walk, walk, one, two, one. Walk, keep walking. You're almost to the door. You're going to make it. You're going to go.
Do you use music?
You know, I don't use music as much as people say that it works and that others use it. I don't know why.
It helps me to get moving.
I'm going to ask you guys this question. Do you both find it more difficult to get to move fast? It's like you have to think about everything, every little movement you do now.
It is difficult to move fast. Sometimes, though, I've always moved quickly. But I find that if I start out fast, it's only within a couple of steps that I start to slow down. You know how that goes? Until you come to a stop. And for me, when I stop, I say, okay, I stopped. But I put my weight back on my heels, stand up really tall, put my weight on my heels, take a deep breath, and that usually is enough to send me going again.
It's a good hack right there then.
Yeah, especially at the top of a staircase.
Oh.
The pause is everything.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's a hard thing. I was at a party, and of course, you know, it's terrible to try to negotiate your way through a crowd of people, especially if you have a walker.
Yes.
I have for busy places, I have a little three-wheeled walker that's a little more compact.
Ooh.
And also you can unlock it so that it squeezes even more narrow. Mm-hmm. So you still have something to hang on to, but it's not so bulky. But I was in a group of a lot of people once, and I froze, and I didn't panic, which is unlike me, but I didn't panic. And all of a sudden I just turned to someone and made like I was conversing with them. You know, said, hi, how you doing? I'm so-and-so. You know, so I thought, well, I'm frozen in this place. Let it look planned, you know?
Can you both stand for a while or no?
Not long. My whole condition is complicated by the fact that I've had three total knees on my right knee. And that really is a predominant reason for my bad walking. Actually.
Did your Parkinson's on your left side or right side or both?
Started on the left.
And you're right dominant?
And I'm right dominant.
So you're favoring your left side, but you're putting all the pressure on your right side, is that correct?
Well, I did, but because of the knee now, my left leg takes a lot of the weight because I'm saving my right knee. What happened? My right knee, I broke my kneecap. It has not been repaired. It's unable to be repaired.
Ouch.
Yeah. And so
I have to ask, how'd you break it?
Well, this is a tragic coincidence, I guess. My neurologist at that time, it's not my current neurologist, changed my medicine. I had been just on plain L-DOPA, you know, carbidopa, levodopa, and he changed me to Rytary, something like Rytary. And unfortunately, he did not titrate me, nor did he really check the dosage. So I was on too high a dose, and I started falling down. I'd be standing there, and all of a sudden, I'd say to Bill, I'm going to fall, and I would fall down. Well, one day I fell, and I broke my kneecap. So that was bad news. So my knee, the first knee replacement, which had been gloriously successful, had to be redone because of that. Then the second knee, total knee, did not, quote, take. It didn't marry the bone marrow. So that got loose and it had to be replaced. So now I have a very crunchy right knee with the third replacement and rods, a rod down my tibia and a rod up my femur.
One strong lady to get through that. That sounds very painful.
It is. I'm a bit stubborn. And I also ask for a lot of help from God. So I just am doing what I can. And I just hope the leg holds out for as long as I live. That's what my goal is now.
And how important is a spiritual life for you?
For me, it's absolutely imperative. Because if you really believe in the hereafter, and I do, you believe that this condition is temporary. You know,
these bodies are temporary.
Absolutely.
Yeah, these vehicles.
Absolutely. Everything is temporary, and we can't even begin to fathom, I don't think, you know, how beautiful it's going to be. At least if you believe what the prophets say and what Jesus has promised us, that's, you know, that's the way it is. So
are there philosophies that you follow? Like, for example, I read a lot of Buddhist philosophy because it helps me to manage life and the philosophy works with my life, but I don't view that necessarily as my religion. Are there philosophies you adhere to?
Well, I am Catholic, and I have my younger son is a priest.
No way.
Very proud of. My older son is wonderful also. He is married and is a drummer in a band called Mixed Nuts.
So you have a lot of tips and tricks, and you've made some inventions. And for those who are listening, I'm wearing one of Jan's inventions. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about your inventions.
Okay, what Heather's holding or wearing, modeling for me, is the kitchen boa. We all know how exotic a boa can be with its feathers and, you know, flounces and whatnot. These are cotton with dish towels attached to both ends. So when you drape it around your neck, you have a towel handy no matter where you are in the kitchen. You know how often you have to wash your hands, or you grab a pot with two towels, you know, and you never know where your towel is. Well, now you always know because it's around your neck, hence the boa. And I do things to kind of jazz them up. Sometimes I'll put little hooks on them or pockets for guys who are like at a tailgate party or something, and they want to have their car keys handy in there or something. But
are you more adaptive because of Parkinson's?
I think I'm more adaptive because I'm a collaborative pianist, actually. I think that the Parkinson's has made me more creative in some ways, but I'm adaptive because as a collaborative pianist, I'm always yielding to the soloist's requests.
Now, what exactly is a collaborative pianist?
Oh, allow me. I grew up with the word accompanist, but in recent years, it has become politically correct to use the word collaborative pianist, because we are collaborating, we are on an equal footing with the soloist. We are not subservient as we might have been thought to be.
In fact, you're more integral than people ever realize. You're just not in the spotlight. My mother is an accompanist.
That's right. That is absolutely right.
So we're gonna effectively call ourselves collaborative Parkinson's patients.
Yeah. We're collaborating with other patients and PD folks. Hey, maybe we can get something going here.
So this is intuitive for you. To create things that make our life easier, because you like being in service, as you said. Uh-huh. And I remember off the record, I asked Jan, Mike, I said, when are you going to start your store? I'm ready to, you know, you can make money. And she's like, that's not my goal. I just want to invent things that make life a little bit easier and sort of do things, you know, I might, you know, give people some or sell a couple of them just to cover costs or something like that. I forget what you said, but it wasn't anything to do with money. And I thought, what is your currency?
What's my currency?
Yeah.
Oh, I think self-satisfaction, or some sort of satisfaction that I did something good today.
Have you met many people with this disease so far in your journey?
I have, I feel. I've been to a couple of the Davis Finney Foundation events. I've been to some of my local things now. So I just try to get, I'll tell you what I have had that's been great through the Davis Finney Foundation and being an ambassador, is that people can find my name and call me when they are diagnosed, if they are kind of in my locale. And recently I've had two women who were recently diagnosed or recently moved to the Baton Rouge area, who didn't know anybody and needed just somebody to talk to about Parkinson's because they felt like they didn't know anything. So I would meet them for coffee or lunch. And in one case, next week I'm going to her retirement home where she's living. She just moved to town. And you know, to try to answer any questions that I'm capable of. In the least case, just give them a little company.
You are listening to the YOPN podcast. Living Well starts here.
Helping people feel less alone by connection is such a good idea for all of us, because as Dr. Lori Mishley and many others have studied, isolation does in fact make this disease progress a lot faster, and it can kill people if they become depressed.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially during like COVID, we're doubly quarantined. Oh, basically.
Yes. And I know someone who had Parkinson's who basically shut himself up and just died away, you know?
I know a few people like that.
It's very sad, but I understand how it can happen, because you get out in public and you think you have to explain to everybody why you're walking funny.
Yeah.
It can be a depressing thing, but if I start to go down that aisle, I try to change my environment, change what's going on in my, you know, head, and turn around, get out of that, get out of there.
When you get down like that, does your husband or anybody, any friends pull you out, or you do it yourself?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't always tell anybody when I get down like that. Sometimes I'll have just a good old cry in my bed before I get up one morning if I feel I'm having a bad day. And then I just say, okay, let's hope that's it for today and let's go on. Sometimes it's very difficult though to refocus, because that whatever it was that sent me down that bad path is still in my head. You know?
Right. The stinking thinking that we all have.
The stinking thinking. Wow, I like that. Yeah. So just don't think too much. Don't think too much and enjoy the moment. That's been hard for me.
Yeah.
Because I do tend to worry. I worry about the future. I worry about how my husband might react when I get bad, you know, when I'm less capable of taking care of myself. I think the divorce rate can be pretty high among Parkinson's patients. And I'm sad for them because it says a lot about their partners.
But, yeah. You know,
I'm very fortunate that my wife has stuck with me through this whole thing.
That's wonderful.
She ran the Boston Marathon with me here, side by side.
Wow. That's
awesome. Isn't that beautiful?
That's great.
Yeah, Donna's great. I can't wait to meet her and you. I wanted to know, what do you see as the biggest challenge to the community at large? Like when you look out, because you have such a unique view and you've worked so hard and you've done so much inner work and you know, you've been the strong one because you're a teacher and a mother and a community member. What do you see when you look out that could change maybe in our community at large?
Well, you know, too many people are so focused on themselves that they don't see other people. And yet at the same time, I've been amazed by the people who are willing to help when I've been in bind. I don't expect them always to help, and they surprise me. So there are good and there are bad surprises out there among the community. I think if everybody could just understand that their own lives could change in a flash. You know, my world changed in that moment that he told me I had Parkinsonism. And theirs could too. So be sympathetic, be empathetic to the people who are going through it right now.
You are listening to the YOPN podcast. Living well starts here.
And I don't call it a disease. I call it a condition. Because we are not infectious, you know, to other
good
people.
Point.
And it's a condition that we try to control as best we can.
Yeah, we manage it.
Right. Sometimes it manages us, but you know, it's like I have Parkinson's, but Parkinson's does not have me.
Look back 16 years now when you were first diagnosed and look forward to today. Okay. If you knew back then what you know now, would you do anything differently?
I don't think so. You know, DBS has always been impressive to me and yet frightening for me. But when I learned that DBS doesn't necessarily help one's gait very much, it kind of took it away from me that, you know, I'm not eligible perhaps for it. And my neurologist now says the same thing. She doesn't think it would help. I don't think I need it, but I'm very aware of its benefits for those who have had it successfully, like our present. You both have had it?
Yeah. It's helped me tremendously. Not my voice, mind you, but it's really helped me.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that. And I guess I'm just too afraid to broach that.
Mine has mixed results, so you should be afraid. And I'm glad that you've been careful with your decision-making, because if I had to do it again, I'm not sure that I would. But we can talk more about that another time.
Okay.
I would love to know, who in our community do you either look up to or connect with? Like, who are your touchstones?
Oh, well, I love my poetry group. That and Connie, both Connie
Wayne.
And pardon me? Oh,
Wayne.
Yes, I love Wayne.
Yeah.
He had some great phone conversations, just the two of us. Bill and I put one of his poems, actually maybe two of his poems, to music, some original music that Bill wrote. And it was just fun because Wayne just got such a kick out of it. So I love that group.
Who's Wayne and who's Bill?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, Wayne Gilbert is a poet, you know, who leads this group that I'm in. And of course, Davis Finney and Connie and actually, I can't remember his last name, Joe from Canada. Is a writing, what's his name? He's writing a book about his first 10 years with Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And he very nicely sent me a copy to kind of edit, you know, help him if there was something that was incoherent or whatever.
And these are no pushovers. I mean, we're talking a three-time Olympian, correct, Connie?
Yeah.
Three different medals and three different events she placed. And then Davis, who was like, you know, Tour de France, like,
yeah,
like the greatest cyclist, in my opinion, that has ever lived, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, really, a lot of people say that. And then, of course, Wayne, who's doing all this work, and it was also a teacher like you, so you have so much to relate too, and a poet, and he goes into prisons in his spare time and helps teach people. And I said to him once, do you ever ask them what they did to get in prison? He said, no, because it doesn't matter. And I thought that was a brilliant answer.
That is brilliant.
He doesn't ask them why they're there.
Doesn't need to know. That's really great, because that gives them a sense of value and not judgment, you know, based on.
Yes. We are not our mistakes, and we all make terrible mistakes. When I first came barreling into this community, I thought I'd always feel pretty good, and I was a little cocky. Boy, then Parkinson's really hit, and it does humble us.
You know what? That's what I always say. I said Parkinson's is a huge lesson in humility, constantly.
Over and again.
It's like,
I'm humble.
Trust me, I'm humble. Yeah.
I heard you the first time. Don't make me fall again. And I do fall on my knees, so you may have just saved me.
Oh.
Thank you for reminding me that, you know, we have to be careful about falls.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say to folks, I don't know what incites me to say this, but I say, if you ever want to hear God laugh, just tell him your plans.
That's so true. That's so wise.
I don't know where I got that, but whoever said it, they knew what they were talking about. So
I saw your Davis Finney video about PD hacks. What are some of your favorite ones?
My favorite ones? Well, I happen to really like my hair, my bobby pin with the buttonhole hack. You know, they do make an instrument that has a hook on one end, and it has this gizmo at the other end that you stick through the buttonhole, grab the button, and then yank the button through the buttonhole. Well, and it's maybe $8 or $9, something like that. But you can do the same thing with a bobby pin. You just wrap the bobby pin around the button, underneath the button, and then you put the straight ends of the bobby pin through the buttonhole and pull the button through. And you can have a bobby pin 100 places in your house if you ever needed to button a button. That's one of my favorites. My husband actually built me a rolling stool that I use in the kitchen. It's just a cheap stool, a wooden stool. You can purchase at Walmart. And he built a dolly for it. And then he molded the seat, so I have a kind of an inlet for my legs, kind of saddle shaped on the top, because originally it was rectangular, and he smoothed the long edges so I could straddle it. And I use that to pedal myself around the kitchen, because sometimes my legs get really tired standing in the kitchen.
What a man.
He's a woodworker, and in fact, he just finished the steps going out of our house here. It's just one big step to the porch and then another big step down to the patio. And it's pretty high for a step. But he just did a half step in the middle for me so that I could take my walker outside just down 3 inches or 3.5 inches, then another 3.5 inches to the porch level. So he's always doing things like that to make life a little easier. Little bitty ramps here and there.
Wow. Your whole family is creative.
Yeah, I think they are, actually.
And solution-based.
Yes. Solution-based, that's very, very true.
You do not wallow.
No, she does not.
Well, I don't like wallowing in other people, so I guess I don't want to do it myself.
Wow.
I look at it this way. It's much easier to smile than it is to frown, so.
Yes, and it takes more muscles to frown.
It does.
Yeah.
Will you be my life coach?
I will be happy to talk to you anytime you want, because I find you invigorating.
Well, I feel the same way. I'm a little emotional. I apologize. Normally I'm
don't
more
be.
Professional.
You know, I find that people with Parkinson's often have a good sense of humor. I wonder if there's something to that. If you have a good sense of humor, look out, you could be a
target. Gavin tells this funny joke. He'll be like, I'm leaving. And he'll be like this. That's it. I'm going to storm out. And he'll be like, I'm storming out. Can you get the door for me? Like, you know, it's just so funny, though. You know, we have to, or we'd be crying.
I know. I do that when suppose I've been out having lunch with my friends, and I say, okay, I got to get going. Got to go home. So I say goodbye to everybody. And then I get up out of my chair and I'm stuck, you know, got to get my knees unlocked. And I said, I'm leaving. I really am. I'm going. And then, you know, I take a couple steps. It's going
5 minutes later. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
5 minutes later. Parting is such sweet sorrow.
Yeah. Trust me. I really am leaving.
I love it.
Well,
Parkinson's is the guest that will not leave.
Amen.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You made a skit off of that, right? We could make a skit off of that if you wanted to.
You could.
Oh. Like the old Saturday Night Live skit, if you remember that one.
Yeah, Kate comes in and just shakes everything down and knocks everything off the table that we just set. And it hurts others around us. You mentioned that one of the things you notice about the community at large is that we can become very very preoccupied with our own management of the disease, very sort of self-absorbed, which is classic for a lot of chronic conditions in humanity, you know. But I will say that it is important for us to note that our carers, our family members, community members, friends, they're all affected.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you certainly have a sense of that. Mike has a sense of that.
Sure.
So how do we curb that damage, that sort of stuff?
That's a tough question. That requires some research. Yeah. And some thinking. I had to think about that.
And communication, which you're really great at.
Well, I try to be. I found out as I got older, it was easier to be truthful. You know, and everybody has this old, how you doing, Jan? Fine. You know, that's not an answer. Unless you just want to blow somebody off. You know, I mean, I'll say, I'm doing pretty well under the circumstances. Thanks for asking. You know, and that's a little bit more considerate, I think, than just saying, I'm fine.
And if you weren't doing well, would you say?
Yeah, actually, I would probably say, well, I'm having a bit of a tough day today, but normally I'm doing pretty well.
But do you handle compliments well?
No.
So humble.
No. Well, I don't know. You know, maybe it's my upbringing from a staunch German Catholic family, and don't be too proud. You know, don't look in the mirror too much.
And my dad just say, don't gild the lily.
Oh, cute. So, yeah, I need to learn to just say thank you.
I saw a therapist, one way I do to say thank you to people, because when you don't give them any acknowledgement for what they told you, it's like blowing them off.
Yeah.
Just give them a little thank you and that'll make them happy.
Exactly. You know, it's like when somebody gives you a gift and you say, oh, no, you shouldn't have done that. Don't do that. Don't, you know, allow them the pleasure of giving you something, you know, in the same way that I like giving people, other people like to give too. So I should not deny them that activity or whatever they want. If they want to say you did a great job, I should not deny them that opportunity.
Exactly.
You know, so.
But you do have a little trouble asking for help because you're fiercely independent, correct?
Yes.
So both things are true.
Absolutely.
Got it. I'm the same way. It is hard. Mike is too. It's very hard for us to go from being so ferociously independent, like I can do this, I got this, to, oh my gosh, could you help me open this can and button my jeans?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that I think of myself, I say, don't get fat because you don't want somebody to have to help you pull your ass off of that career. So
I have to say, I'm a little smitten. I'm a little shell shocked. And I'm, if you have a fan club, I'm the leader.
Oh,
I would like to be the leader of a fan club. I'm going to start one. If there's not, there's probably 10 of them already. Your students must love seeing you.
Well, I do think that I stay in touch with a lot of my students and they've been very sweet to me. I have had some foreign students, however, that when my symptoms first started, one of them laughed at me when I was doing a little shuffle across my studio. She said, oh, you're walking like a little girl. And I said, she was foreign. And I had to explain to her that I was not putting on anything, you know, and then she understood and she was quite embarrassed actually that she had said that. But
she thought you were trying to be funny.
Yeah, she thought I was trying to be funny and I was not. This is not funny.
A withering look usually helps too.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Can you get out of my office, please? Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, that's the only way, really. You just have to laugh and be patient.
You are listening to the YOPN podcast. Living Well Starts Here.
I'll tell you, today I'm going to be heading into my sewing room and doing a bunch of Japanese knot bags. I'm behind in my production.
What is a Japanese knot bag?
Yeah, it's a bag with one small loop and one big loop. And you thread the big loop through the small loop to close the bag because there's no zipper, no buttons, no clasps, anything like that.
It's just perfect for parkies, it sounds like.
It is.
Another one would be Velcro.
Yes. Yeah. And I modify them. I put pockets in them and make them. I have a friend who owns a drapery upholstery shop downtown, and he gives me his remnants.
That's cool.
Oh, it's
awesome. I need a reupholster and a draper, but I'm over here in California. Darn.
Well, he'd probably like to go on a trip to see you.
But, on over. You're welcome anytime.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Maybe he'd bring
me. We need you.
Well, he's very generous and gives me a lot of remnants. And so I end up with these great tapestry fabrics or satins or linens, you know, really high quality stuff. Yeah. And of course, I'm here in Louisiana, so I'm hoping I can get in the swimming pool today to do some exercises. But it is stinking hot outside. You know, it's the kind of weather now this summer when when it rains, the humidity goes down to 100%. So my friend just came back from California and he said the weather was perfect.
I love it.
I am jealous of that, but I'll allow you to have that happiness.
Over. Y'all are always welcome. I have a no stairs in my apartment.
That's really great. That's important. You know, with the other hacks, I think a lot of it is just planning. You know, for people with Parkinson's, they've got to plan ahead. You know, putting your medicines where you're going to need them, having water where you're going to need it.
Bathroom hacks.
Bathroom hacks. Oh my gosh. I've got handles on my commode. And Bill actually it's a small room, so he put a bar across the little room so I can pull myself up with that too.
Love it.
And you know about those suction cup handles?
I've seen them, yeah.
They do not work well if it's on a painted or wallpapered surface, but if it's like a stone, you know, ceramic kind of a shower surface, they work pretty well.
They look best for the showers, those kind of suction cups.
Yes, yes.
So is there anybody in the community that you really look up to?
A Parkinson's person?
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of the local ones simply because I don't go to the support groups. I just know the women in my women's group, and they're all so different. You know, if you've met one person with Parkinson's, you've just met one person. Mm-hmm. And our symptoms are so varied. It's a moving target for a lot of people, a lot of doctors. So I'm sorry, I can't say that. There is one person I admire who has Parkinson's. I find that everyone I talk with, they're always so grateful after I've called them or gotten together with them. They're very grateful. And that makes me feel good that they don't feel alone anymore. And I guess one of the reasons too, I don't go to the support groups is I have a really terrific neighborhood support team.
Because have you ever really felt alone with this disease, with Parkinson's?
I have not.
It's great.
I honestly can say I have not, because I have so many people who know I have Parkinson's, first of all. And then the neighborhood, they're always checking on me.
It sounds like they kind of get it, which is rare.
Yeah, it is rare. But I think part of it is if I appear comfortable with them, then they are comfortable with me.
Starts with you, exactly. It's a great point.
Yes, I because the more standoffish or nervous I might appear, that makes them less likely to engage. Somehow that ease produces comfort in the pairing.
You really are collaborative.
Well,
in all aspects.
I guess I was born to be this way, and I'm grateful because I've always liked working with people, not by myself.
Same here.
So I guess I'm kind of drawn to people. If I have to have this, I guess it's a good thing I can talk to people and get to know them a little better.
And there's also meaning and purpose, like Viktor Frankl's work that Brad McDaniels has been talking about. You have meaning and purpose when you help others. It makes us all together feel sort of more whole.
That's right. And I think we really have to have hope for not necessarily a cure in our lifetime, but a way to stop the disease. If they could stop it right now where I am, I would be ever so grateful.
I've been saying that for 16 years now.
That's right.
Yeah, we're like, oh, no.
You've had enough time.
A lot's broken. Same carbolevidopa as they had in, what, 69, 68?
Yes, yes, it's the same thing, just a different vehicle, you know? My husband recently forwarded an article to me by a doctor from the University of Rochester, New York. I think his first name is Dory. Oh, goodness.
Ray Dorsey?
Yes.
Oh, Ray Dorsey. Okay.
Yes, thank you. In which he says the long road to hope or recovery or something like that. But it's a very hopeful article. I would recommend it to anybody who can find it on the web based on what I've said. I met him once at a conference in Austin, Texas, and he really was hopeful. And it's really reassuring to meet a medical person who's hopeful.
Any words of hope and encouragement?
Well, if anything, I would want them to know that we want to be treated like anybody else. If we need help, you know, we'll ask and be willing to give it. But don't treat us like we have something that they can't deal with or they don't want to look at. But to just treat us like fellow human beings. And we're doing the best we can. They're doing the best they can.
That's a wrap for today, folks. We're going to close it out with Luck Be a Lady by Old Blue Eyes himself, Frank Sinatra. Have a great night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
They call you Lady Luck. But there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me. The pickings have been lush. And yet before this evening is over, you might give me the brush. You might forget your manners. You might refuse to stay. And so the best that I can do is pray. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck if you've ever been a lady to begin with. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck let a gentleman see how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Luck be a lady with me. A lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair. It isn't nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and blow on some other guy's dice. Let's keep this party polite. Never get out of my sight. Stick with me, baby, I'm the fella you came in with. Luck be a lady tonight. Let a gentleman see just how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Hey, luck be a lady with me. A lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair, and it's not nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and blow on some other guy's dice. So let's keep the party polite. Never get out of my sight. Stick with me, baby, I'm the guy that you came in with. Luck be a lady. Luck be a lady.